this is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Yolitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
Hey, welcome back. Not to the podcast episode.
Welcome to the podcast viewers and listeners as well.
Welcome back to North America, Wheeler.
Thanks. It's good to be back. I mean, is it, though?
I've had some good assignments. But this deal of going to Slovenia to watch the NBA championship that was happening in the United States.
Yeah.
How did you score that? Who do you have pictures of to get this deal?
I still don't really know how it happened. I just know it did happen, and it's all a blur now. So Luka Doncic, for you guys who are not basketball fans out there, Luka Doncic, the superstar on the Dallas Mavericks, he's from Slovenia. So I proposed, like, hey, we should go to Slovenia and talk about how he's in the finals and, you know, get reaction from people there and all of that. And they actually bit. They went for it. So I think they're going to take it out of the Yolitics budget.
You know what's great about Wheeler here, and we talk about this behind the scenes all the time. Our managers are so scared.
They're not scared. They're not scared.
So I got a call the other day, and they said, "Listen, we got to give Wheeler some time off. Can you fill in for him on Thursday at 4 o'clock?" I said, "Sure. If that, you know, helps Wheeler get readjusted to Central Time Zone, then I'm happy to do it here." They're so afraid of him. They bite on everything he pitches.
They are not afraid of me. If they're afraid of me, I feel really sorry for people they're not afraid of.
I'm glad they loaned you to this podcast, my friend, because we were going to have to stick a fork in it.
Yeah,
it
is.
Coming back.
It is good to be back. It was great to be there, though. Yeah. And what a stunning country. If you ever get the chance to go to Slovenia, it is a beautiful, beautiful place. Great people there. Don't do it for work. I mean, I think I really, in seriousness, I slept like 4 hours a night for many of the nights. I mean, we were running and gutting.
You hear this?
Well, you're playing a little violin. I can't hear it.
All right, we're back at the Stonely P. This is the brand new Stonely P. The original one over on Maple. Been there 51 years. It closed in April. We were there, a year and a half ago, I think.
Yeah.
Doing one of our last podcasts there. They reopened here. It's fantastic. They have a handful of things. It looks a lot like the original one.
Yeah.
They have some of the old original, like 1800 pharmacy shelves. They brought one of the booths over. But everything else looks a lot like it, like the pictures you can see these in the background.
They've recreated
the iconic neon sign is here greeting you when you walk in.
They've recreated it here. It's really nice. I'm having the lemon shandy, by the way, because it's summer. And it's tart.
Wasn't surprised you ordered that. I'm having the Hefeweizen, the Manhattan Project Fallout.
And we
Hefeweizen beer.
And we are doing a follow-up. We started this in January of this year with Laura Lee Prather. She is an attorney with Haynes Boone. I always want to say that backwards. With Haynes Boone out of Austin. And Tegna, which is the owner of this Yolitics podcast. Yeah. It has retained her services, is that the right way of saying it, to help us to get the records in what happened in Uvalde more than 2 years ago at Robb Elementary School, where 19 little elementary school students were murdered, as well as two elementary school teachers there in that horrible mass shooting. And here we are. More than 2 years later, we still don't have the full record of what happened. And we brought you back here, Laura, because we want an update on what has happened. And we talked about this right before we began the podcast. So much has happened since we talked to you in January, and yet so little.
That's absolutely correct. We have, in some ways, made tremendous progress. We've gotten a ruling from the Travis County Court that the records should be made available from the Department of Public Safety, and yet DPS has appealed that ruling and managed to delay the process for 6 months. We just received their brief in the appellate court.
And their brief is their argument on why they want to. But let's just remind our listeners and our viewers here why this is important. The families of these 19 victims that Jason was talking about, they can't go forward with their lawsuits and try to get any type of recovery or justice or anything until DPS, state troopers, essentially hand over all the records of what happened. And the state is not doing that 2 years later.
It's hugely important for so many reasons. It's important for the families to be able to get justice, to be able to go forward with their claims. They filed a lawsuit a couple of weeks ago when it was the 2-year anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
The opening paragraph of their lawsuit says the facts contained in this petition were pieced together without access to police reports, incident video statements, autopsy reports, ballistic reports, blood spatter reports, blood tests, as no state agency nor federal agency responded to open records requests. That's what they're having to do. That's what they're having to resort to in filing their claims. They are blindly filing claims just with pieced together information that has essentially been leaked to the media.
And explain how strange that is to not have those basic pieces of information more than 2 years after the fact.
You know, it is bizarre. This is such a unique situation where you have the fox guarding the hen house. You have DPS doing its own investigation into itself. So under the law, if there is an ongoing investigation and disclosure of information would interfere with that investigation, then those materials shouldn't be made available until the investigation is complete. That's not the situation here. Mm-hmm. There is no ability to interfere with an investigation by producing material that cannot be changed. Mm-hmm. Video evidence, audio evidence, things that are immutable, mm-hmm. that Colonel McCraw himself has said cannot be changed.
He's the head of DPS.
Yeah.
He's the head of DPS.
He said a lot of things, though. He's also said that, you know, we want to get this video out there. We want to get this information out there. And it's a, you know, this sort of rah-rah moment. But Colonel McCraw, here we are, you know, 2 years plus later, and it's not out there. And your agency, and we've asked to speak with them, and, you know, that's gone nowhere. But your agency is dragging this process out. You say one thing, but it's that whole thing about watch what they do, not what they say. You say one thing that we want to get all the information out there, but the information is still not out there. And what investigation is there to protect? Yeah. The shooter's dead. You know what happened there. The you know, U.S. Department of Justice has long ago issued its full report on this, which was voluminous. What's left to investigate?
Right. Right. There's nothing left to investigate. And so what you have here is you have a situation where DOJ issued a 610-page report. In that report, they said there were cascading failures and that this information needed to come out. You have the House report that came out just 6 weeks after, 77-page report that
came
out.
The Texas House.
6 weeks after the fateful shooting. It also said information needs to come out and that the information that had come out so far had been conflicting and had been not accurate. Hmm. So those bodies that have already done investigations have all called for transparency. And yet what we have is a situation where we are being told you should be placated by the reports that have come out. None of the underlying information should come out. Now, how are we supposed to have our own conclusions and draw our own conclusions from the facts? Because what we're being told is accept the narrative. Mm. And the narrative does not allow any sort of independent look at the underlying facts. Mm.
Jason mentioned Colonel Steve McCraw, the head of DPS, and there's he hasn't talked to us. We've asked multiple times over the last 2 years. But he did talk to KVU, our station in Austin. I'm going to play a couple of clips for you. I want you to listen to this. This is what he's saying, the argument he's making. Oh, we need to release this. We need to get it out so we can move on. Take a listen.
The more evidence that comes out, and I look forward to releasing all the information, all the evidence, and particularly the video evidence and the audio evidence, because the public is in best position to look at and determine for themselves. But you can't, I can't change it, you know. I can't change the facts. It may seem unseemly to some, but in the end, it's the truth.
So, you heard what Colonel McCraw said.
It sounds good.
It's important that, yeah, it sounds good. It sounds mm-hmm. like, you know, being transparent. What else is in these reports? What else are in these documents that they're protecting, that they're hiding?
So, let me just give you a flavor of what hasn't come out. No videos. No dash cams. No 911 calls. No autopsy reports. no ballistic reports, no toxicology reports, no witness interviews, no incident reports, no use of force reports, and the list goes on and on and on. So the public is left to just accept a carefully crafted narrative or what has been leaked. That's not acceptable. If you're going to learn from your mistakes, and really, like, there are three things that need to come out of this, and the only way to get there is through transparency. One is there needs to be accountability. That's going to help the public regain trust, right? Two is there needs to be learning from our mistakes. That's going to help law enforcement. That doesn't happen through an internal investigation only. You've got to have external eyes looking at that. That's the only way there's truly going to be reform. And then third, there needs to be closure and justice for the families. Again, that can't happen without transparency. And so until we have transparency, this is just going to be an albatross around DPS's neck.
Laura, do you think that there's something in all those reports, that list that you were talking about there, that they really want to keep from the public? It's going to show that the DPS and the rest of law enforcement didn't go in for more than an hour to confront the shooter. But, you know, we've seen the surveillance video from inside the school. We've seen some body cam video that's been leaked. But what else is in there that might be the smoking gun, if you will, the red herring?
You know, I think the whole panoply is going to show what is embarrassing. I mean, I think it's going to be embarrassing when we have such a tremendous law and order state that is so used to touting our law enforcement as the best in the nation. And it's going to show that they didn't know what they were doing. They absolutely were running around scared of it, of a machine gun. I mean, think about it. It was 376 officers to one 18-year-old kid, and they couldn't breach the classroom. So I think it's going to be an embarrassment, and they're trying to save themselves from that embarrassment. But again, that's not going to help anyone in the long run.
And is the calculation here that, you know, you see this sometimes with law enforcement, they don't want, you know, passions to be inflamed among the public. They don't want to look bad to the public. Is the calculation here, in your estimation, that they just sort of want this? I mean, in a lot of people's minds, this has, you know, sort of faded from, you know, the forefront. Is it just a matter of, let's keep that over there, let's sweep this under the rug, let's just move on? I mean, if you didn't keep pressing, we might never see these records.
I mean, I think it is a waiting game, right? I think people's memories fade. I mean, you have these poor children whose memories just get ushered into nothingness because essentially people forget, people move on. And that is the biggest fear that these families have expressed. They've expressed them in public venues all over the place. They don't want their children forgotten. And so I don't want to say no one is listening. The city just entered into a settlement with the families, the city of Uvalde. And in doing so, you know, they paid the maximum of their insurance policy.
Which wasn't a huge figure for, you know, the number of families. We're talking about $2
million. $2 million. But they set aside a day of remembrance, May 24th. They have established specific guidelines that they're implementing for their police force to increase their training. They've established a memorial that they're going to be putting in the city plaza. They've contributed to mental health care for the family. And so, you know, and it's not surprising that the city also is the entity that voluntarily disclosed their body camera footage. Mm-hmm. So that's the other thing to keep in mind. These exemptions that are being relied on are all discretionary, which means
the exemptions from DPS where they're arguing in court.
Exactly. They can do the right thing. They can choose to disclose the information.
They could
have done it 2 years ago. And so you have governmental entities like the city of Uvalde who has made the conscious choice to try to heal the wounds and move on in a productive way. And in doing so, they've proactively gone to the families and entered into this settlement. They proactively disclosed the body camera footage from that day.
Let me go back to that word discretionary, because, you know, you have, again, Colonel Steve McCraw, head of DPS. It's his discretion. he has the discretion to go, oh, well, release this stuff. The guy we just heard from there in that clip saying, we want to release all this. Let's get all this stuff released. He has the discretion to release it. He's not bound by something saying he can't.
That is absolutely correct. And it is worth your viewers and listeners noting that interview was conducted with Colonel McCraw in September of 2022. So, you know, a year and a half ago. And yet since that time, the agency that he oversees has not produced the documents in compliance with the court order in the district court. They have instead chosen to appeal. They got three extensions of time in filing their brief, which has now pushed the briefing schedule substantially. And all of that moves them into a greater likelihood of the case being moved from the Austin Court of Appeals to this newly created 15th Court of Appeals, which has Governor Abbott's appointed judges overseeing it as opposed to elected judges.
Now, that's a big deal.
How likely is that to happen?
Very. At this point, very. Yes, because, I mean, the briefing was delayed by 3.5 months.
And let's just piece things together here. The governor can appoint the judges to the 15th court. The governor also is the direct boss of Steve McCraw. McCraw works at the pleasure of the governor in that position. He doesn't report to anyone else in that position. That's where the concern is. That's where things look a little fishy. They don't look a little fishy. They are a little fishy.
There's a lot of concern. There's a lot of concern now. DPS tried to seal their entire brief. They filed a motion to seal on the Friday before it was due.
And this is the argument not to release anything. This is why we shouldn't release it, court, and we don't want anybody to see this. What was in there, you think, that they didn't want anyone to see?
Ultimately, they filed a redacted brief that just had portions that were that referenced the evidence logs that they redacted. But the goal originally was to seal the entire brief and all of the arguments from public view. And so that also raises concerns, because this is about transparency and accountability. This is a Public Information Act lawsuit.
Now, when we talked to you back in January, we were really looking ahead to the 2-year mark, May 24th, 2 years since it happened. That was when the statute of limitations expires. If this case hadn't been settled by then it could be, the families wouldn't have any legal recourse to pursue it. We've passed that mark now. Do the families have any options now, or since this is still tied up in court?
Well, now what's happened is there's a whole nother crop of lawsuits that have been filed. Mm-hmm. So the city announced their settlement with the families 2 days before the 2-year anniversary. After that, there have been lawsuits that have been filed against the machine gun manufacturer, against UPS and FedEx for the delivery of this Hellfire trigger. The Hellfire trigger manufacturer has been sued.
And that trigger turns a firearm from semi-automatic to automatic.
Exactly. Lawsuits filed against Instagram and Facebook, the makers of Call of Duty, have been sued. And so now there are just a whole nother crop of lawsuits that have been filed, and many of them are very dependent upon this information being released. And I should also make sure to mention that DPS has been sued, and the 92 officers who responded that day have been sued in federal court. And so there's yet another incentive not to disclose the information.
So the lawsuits.
Make sure I'm clear, though. Are the families still able to pursue their case against DPS, even though we're beyond that statute of limitations?
They filed their lawsuits. We'll see if they have the evidence to be able to continue.
I was going to ask that, because they've got that foothold, which says, boom, here, it's been filed.
Correct.
Okay, so does a new clock start ticking there to where now they've got to produce the evidence that backs up that lawsuit, and what is that?
Yeah. Well, what'll happen is they'll be met with motions to dismiss, and then the court will have to decide whether or not they have sufficient evidence to move forward.
Okay. And does the court also have the power in a case like that to go, well, it doesn't look like you have sufficient evidence to move forward. DPS, where's that evidence? What's going on there? Let's get this moving. Do they have that power?
I think there will be significant fights. I think what you'll see is parallel fights for discovery in the lawsuits, and the public trying to get the information through the public information lawsuits that we filed. Mm-hmm. The problem with discovery in a lawsuit is they can enter into protective orders. Mm. And those protective orders can then still keep the public at large from having the information, much like the NDAs that mm-hmm. Senator Gutierrez and others were forced to sign in order to get the information.
Yeah, non-disclosure agreements that a senator in Texas is having to sign to look at the footage, the body camera footage,
NDAs
so that he can't talk about
days.
It.
NDAs are made a lot of news. Let me hop back in real quick. You mentioned about the city of Uvalde settling with the families just 2 days before the statute expired. The county and the school district, though, in Uvalde still haven't done that.
The county, it has been reported, is in discussions to also settle for their $2 million policy. I don't know where that stands, but in the wake of those discussions, DPS was sued, the 92 officers were sued, and the ISD was sued, as well as Pete Arredondo, the principal at the school, and several others. You didn't see a separate lawsuit filed against the county at that time. So I do think the reports of settlement negotiations is correct.
And why are those lawsuits against the county and the school district taking so long? They don't have the records that DPS has. Are they all contingent on that, or is the county and the school district stonewalling? Were they?
So we have a separate lawsuit
sure. mm-hmm.
in Uvalde against the county, the ISD, and the city. That's filed on behalf of 18 different news organizations. And those news organizations, by the way, range from very small local Texas Tribune to New York Times. Mm. Range political spectrum. You've got CNN and Sinclair. Mm-hmm. So this is not, there's nothing political about who is seeking these public records. It is everyone seeking the public records. And the lawsuit in that particular instance, the one that was filed in Uvalde County on behalf of these 18 news organizations, is currently being considered on a summary judgment. Mm. And we're waiting for a ruling on that right now.
Any idea when that will be?
Days, within days.
Now, we've seen some odd things happening in the courts, though, with these cases as they've been moving through. Just for the layperson, can you kind of lay out kind of the oddity of what we've been seeing here? Because I think a lot of people assume, well, DPS doesn't want that stuff out, or that entity is trying to protect itself. But these things usually work themselves out when they're before a judge. We're not necessarily seeing that.
Yeah, I will say there's been surprises. Like, for instance, the DPS third motion for extension, the fact that the Court of Appeals just rubber stamped that request. I mean, when you look at our state courts of appeals, usually if there is an initial request for an extension, fine, no problem. They're very understanding of busy attorney schedules. But mm-hmm. when you get to the third, that should raise some eyebrows. That should cause some concern. People talk about the Fifth Circuit and how strict the Fifth Circuit is. You can ask for a 30-day extension there, and they may give you 7. But they
are very conservative Fifth Circuit. Yeah.
Very conservative Fifth Circuit. They run a tight ship. You try to seal something in the Fifth Circuit, this whole last-minute motion to seal the Fifth Circuit, they have none of that. Hmm. That does not happen there. But our state courts of appeal, I mean, it is just interesting to me that a third motion for extension of time gets rubber stamped. In Uvalde County, we have the county judge who is supposed to be hearing the case there assign the case to the chief administrative law judge. Hmm.
In San Antonio.
Hmm. So that's where this is pending. We thought we were going to have a hearing on June 3rd. We found out a week before the hearing that it was being considered under submission. Hmm. I don't know what to tell you.
I think, and if you are, sort of shaking your head a little bit and trying to keep up with all of this, because it sounds like, you're looking at a roadmap that goes in every direction. We're sitting here at the table doing the same thing, and you've been in this for a very long time practicing law. Have you ever seen anything like this?
I haven't seen so many different tentacles of delay, which is what we've seen in every aspect of these cases.
Tentacles of delay. That is a great way of putting it.
Here's what I can't figure out. It's the politics of it. Steve McCraw, the director of DPS, works at the pleasure of the governor. Steve McCraw also, for anybody's paying attention, is also the guy in charge of the governor's border initiative. You know, all that down there. The governor is not going to fire Steve McCraw unless there's just a massive wave of something that comes across McCraw. That's why I don't understand the delay on this thing.
I do. I mean, you just described it. Is this the massive wave? If this stuff comes out, is it so embarrassing that it creates its own critical mass and you go, oh my gosh.
Is it?
I mean, well, Steve McCraw even said this was an abject failure of law enforcement when he testified before the House here in Texas. Right. So, you know, it's one thing to say that. It's another when people can see it with their own eyes and they can see these videos and they can see the timeline and they can see all of the information. Maybe that's why.
Maybe. I mean, keep in mind, the week before he was interviewed by Tony Pawlecki.
At K-View
for, the clip that you aired, he had told CNN that if there was any fault to be had with DPS officers, he was going to resign. That was, again, more than a year and a half ago. And so if the records coming out shows completely indisputable terms that there was fault by DPS, the public outcry, I would assume, is going to be tremendous.
Mm-hmm. Even after all this time, though?
You know, I think people just want answers right now. I think people want answers and they want to be able to regain trust in law enforcement. And right now they just can't do that. So, how does that happen in a world where there's no transparency?
There's going to be some people watching this, listening to this, who go, what are you going on and on about? Like, why do you continue this? Because we've seen what happened. We know what happened. We have the outline of what happened. We've seen some of this body camera video. We've seen the guys lined up there in the hallway. Yeah, they took a long time to go in. We know how this ended. Why keep pursuing this? We already know what happened.
But we don't. Okay, so let's look at this in what has been produced and what has been leaked. Okay, what's been produced? Dustin Burroughs decided to produce the hallway videos.
State lawmaker, state representative, yes.
After the House report came out, he made that choice, which was a very brave choice.
So we saw them lined up in the hallway.
We saw them lined up in the hallway.
Because of that.
Exactly, because of that. The Uvalde mayor, Don McLaughlin, at the time, decided voluntarily to produce the body camera footage. But keep in mind, there were only 7 Uvalde Police Department officials that had body camera footage on. 25 responded, only 7 had body camera footage. So out of the 377 law enforcement that were there, we've seen 7. That's all that's been produced by law enforcement. Now, we've had leaks, but if you have leaks, someone is controlling what they are leaking. Mm. So they want you to have a certain view of this. And that's the only view that the public gets. That's still not the entire picture. Mm-hmm. And without the entire picture, how can you truly be able to draw conclusions?
So we've seen a tiny snippet here. You gave us the last time the number of videos or the amount of video that we're talking about that exists, though. How much is that again?
It's terabytes of data. 2.8 terabytes of data.
Wow. Like, I think you said 300,000 Webster dictionaries worth of information.
Yeah.
That's what we still haven't seen.
Correct.
So if you had to compare that to what we have seen, have we even seen, a couple of Webster dictionaries? One Webster dictionary?
Yeah, maybe.
Okay, and there's another 300,000 that we haven't seen.
Exactly.
So we think we know everything, for people who think we've heard this story. You've looked at one dictionary, there's another 300,000.
Exactly.
But is the story going to change, though, if we keep going through those pages?
Oh, I think what we're going to end up seeing is a number of different ways in which we can get better, right? We already know that the majority of these officers had active shooter training, but not enough of it, right? We've already been able to establish that the students in that classroom had more training for shooters coming on campus than the officers who responded, which is staggering, just staggering. So we'll be able to know, you know, more about that. We'll be able to know more about who knew what when. I mean, there the video shows, you know, people on their cell phones, and yet no text messages are being produced. What were they, if they're sitting there on their cell phone and you can see that they're text messaging, who knew what when? And was,
so we know texts were being sent.
Exactly.
But we haven't seen what they say.
Right, right. In that hallway, by law enforcement. But we don't know what they were saying, who they were saying it to.
And you know, we went through this before. How do you get better? How do you make me as a parent feel better about my kid being in school? And we, you know, we prevent this horrible thing from happening again. How do we improve that response? How do we do all of these things if we don't have it all laid out and accountability for certain people involved and a plan going forward where we say, hey, these were all the mistakes that were made. Here's how we're going to remedy those, and we're going to fix things. We're going to give you confidence as a public because we are answerable to you.
That's
the way it has always, you know, been presumed to be.
That's the problem. I mean, that is the problem for the public at large, and then you look at the problem for the families. Okay, autopsy reports. Let's talk about that. Those have been closed off completely. The DOJ report specifically said there were people who died due to delay. Mm. How do you establish whether your loved one died due to delay without having access to that information?
You can't even see your own kid's autopsy report then.
Everything has been closed off.
How do you, I mean, and I don't know that there is such a thing as closure, you know, when we talk about these things, but how do you even inch toward closure when you as a parent or you as a spouse, you know, for the teachers involved here, as a family member, how do you inch toward closure if you cannot see these things?
I don't know. I don't think you can.
I can hear the frustration in your voice, though, as we talk here.
Yeah, it's it is palpable, and it is that way because it just feels like we all know when we make a mistake, we need to do the right thing and fess up. And I just cannot fathom why this clear, large mistake that has been made, people can't fess up and can't decide to do better.
You said the last time that you knew that it was going to be a Herculean task to take on Texas law enforcement, Texas DPS, and to try to get records released when they didn't want to release records. Did you ever fathom it would be this hard?
I knew this would be a case that would go all the way up. I just figured that that would happen if they chose to fight. I guess what I hoped for was along the way we could trust what Colonel McCraw said and he would disclose the information. I thought that after the DPS investigation was over, maybe what he said he'd actually follow through with and we wouldn't still be fighting.
Has this shaken your faith, though, in the process, in institutions, in the judicial system up to this point? Has it shaken that?
No, because I think ultimately the courts are going to do the right thing. I mean, so far, Travis County did the right thing. They ruled the right way. I think that ultimately these records will come out and that the courts will do the right thing. These law enforcement exemptions, that is what primarily DPS is relying on to not give the records, they were never intended to protect law enforcement from investigations into themselves. We looked back at the records of when the law enforcement exemption was added to the Texas Public Information Act. And there actually were some public hearings on it after the fact. And we have the House Speaker at the time, Price Daniel Jr., saying, This exception should not be construed in a manner which would permit any or all law enforcement agencies to operate under a blanket of secrecy. Hmm. So this problem was anticipated.
Right.
And the Speaker of the House expressly said, that's not what this is for.
And let me lay out
and that's what's happening.
Yeah, it's 100% what's happening. You know this from filing open records requests.
Yeah.
So whether you're asking for a dash cam video of a DUI arrest or anything, it has happened so many times, the law enforcement exemption, oh, it's still under investigation, you can't get it for a while. You can't get it until we finish the investigation. When you finish the investigation, we finish it when you finish it. And that's what's being claimed on a much bigger scale right here, and we're 2 years in.
It's what's being claimed, and what's even more troubling is that now we're seeing that they're bringing in this dead suspect loophole. And so there's two different bases for the law enforcement exemption. One is interference with an investigation or a prosecution. Again, not just the existence of, but the interference. If disclosure of the information would interfere.
Sure.
It's not going to interfere when you have Colonel McCraw saying it's immutable evidence that needs to come out.
It's not going to change.
Yes, not going to change.
Okay, so
right?
That knocks that one off.
Right. And then the second is if the investigation didn't result in deferred adjudication or a conviction. That's to protect the innocent, right? You don't want somebody having an investigative file out on them if they ultimately didn't have a conviction.
This guy's dead.
Right. We can tick that one off too.
But this case, the shooter is dead. So that shouldn't apply. The problem is, because the shooter is dead, no deferred adjudication, no conviction.
Ah.
Right? So that's what we call the dead suspect loophole.
Hmm.
That allows law enforcement to choose if they will ever disclose information about an in-custody death, about a situation like this. They can keep that information closed off from the public forever because the guy is dead.
So they're going by the letter of what that is written there, not by the spirit of what is written
correct,
there.
Correct, correct.
The legislature needs to fix that then.
So last session, and this was after four sessions of fighting.
To close this loophole.
Joe Moody, for four sessions,
Democrat
brought,
from El Paso.
Yes, former Speaker Pro Tem,
sure.
Brought a bill to close off the loophole, worked with all facets of law enforcement, did this four sessions in a row. Finally, last session, he was able to close off part of it. But that went into effect after Uvalde. Wow.
So my last question is, you kind of alluded to this. I'm just curious. So do you think these records will ever be released based on what you just said with the dead suspect loophole?
Well, they didn't. The dead suspect loophole argument was not initially made. It was only made in these recent pleadings by DPS.
So they're looking for anything, then.
So, yeah.
But do you think these records will ever come out, Laura?
I think they will, because I'm an optimist.
Hmm.
I think they will.
You're at the wrong table, then, if you're an optimist. Because
well, you're balancing us then. That's great.
I think the Texas Supreme Court will do the right thing.
Yeah, you have to be an optimist to keep up this battle, because it's just, it's almost a battle of attrition, isn't it? So this is not about bashing DPS.
Hmm.
I mean, the media organizations that are trying to get this information. It's about putting the full record out there. It's about putting transparency out there. It's about accountability. It's about seeing the truth. It's not about bashing DPS. I think everybody in this state can agree. We would all like DPS to learn from any mistakes that are made so that we can all be better protected by this agency that we pay.
Absolutely. I mean, there is nobody in this state that wants DPS to fail. We all benefit from DPS learning and getting better from this.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that doesn't happen with an internal review. That happens with a full, transparent disclosure of information so that external voices can say, hey, did you consider this? Perhaps this would be a good idea moving forward. That doesn't happen when all you do is have internal reviews.
And I think even the biggest critics can acknowledge that mistakes get made. It happens.
Absolutely.
You're in law enforcement, the pressure is high. You know, you're making life or death decisions in split seconds. We get that mistakes happen. We also get, though, that you can learn from mistakes and everything can get better from there. And these families in Uvalde who are suing, you know, they've sued so many different entities. It's not about the money. I mean, it's about so often, we've seen this over and over again, lawsuits and big judgments are what change things. Sometimes you don't get change through a legislature. You get change through big lawsuits that result in huge judgments.
Right. I mean, the issue that the city agreed to in their settlement that involved better training for the police department there, you don't get that from a lawsuit. You get that from resolution. And that is huge. That is a huge piece of why those families decided to settle, right?
Mm-hmm. Before we let you go, what should we be looking for?
Because you already asked your last.
This wasn't the last question. This is before we let you go.
Okay.
Before we let you go.
This is the before we let you go question.
And then I'm going to think of another phrase to come up with for the third and the last question. What should we be watching for as far as dates go? Is there anything else, any other threshold timeline coming up that we should be looking for?
So I think we'll have a resolution at least at the trial court level. In the Uvalde County case, that's the one against the county and the ISD. I think that'll happen very soon.
Okay. With DPS, though?
With DPS, our briefing is due in a couple of weeks. I would anticipate their briefing being completed by the end of summer. And then we'll see what the 15th Court of Appeals does if it goes there. Because on September 1st, everything that is a lawsuit against the state gets moved from the Third Court of Appeals to the 15th Court of Appeals. Mm-hmm. That's why all these delays are significant.
That's what I was...
They're pushing it.
I wrote that down here while we were talking here. Watch for the 15th with a bunch of lines underneath it. It seems like if you're trying to keep up with the ball here, okay, and the ball has moved around a lot in the past 2 years, and there's... looks like a very good game of hide the ball happening. If you're trying to watch the ball, that's where you really want to watch when that ball enters that 15th court that's been newly created, that is staffed up judge-wise by the governor. And again, this is the governor's appointee heading up DPS. You're fairly certain this ends up in that court, and big things could happen there.
At least initially, right? Under the plain language of the statute, that's where it will go as of September 1st. Now, that 15th Court of Appeals is going to be overloaded with so much that's going to get transferred to them. And there's already a constitutional challenge that has been filed by Dallas County against the 15th Court of Appeals. No doubt there will be more, which will only further delay what happens in this case.
But you think that's why we've seen the delays that we've seen already, to just get it to there?
Yes.
Wow.
We'll keep watching.
Laura Lee Prather from Haynes Boone, thanks so much for coming back on the program with us. It's frustrating to hear about this. I hope something gets resolved soon, but you think it's going to go to the Supreme Court? No. State Supreme Court.
I do ultimately think it'll go there. I do have some hope, though, along the way. You know, the fact that we are looking at some potential settlements with some government agencies along the way.
That might help.
And there's a wild card here too. What do we see in the next legislative session? We've seen some people who've bravely stood up, both sides of the aisle too.
Right.
This isn't a Republican or Democrat
nope.
thing. We've seen people who've bravely stood up. Do we see it? Something happen there?
Exactly.
All right, perfect. Thanks so much for the time. We really appreciate it.
Sure, thanks for having me.
Hey y'all, want to see the Jasons Talk Politics? Download the WFAA Plus streaming app for your smart TV and watch the latest episode of Y'allitics each Wednesday night at 8:30.